At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Good news. The report is that Evan Gershkovich, the Wall Street Journal reporter who's been abused and detained by the Russian authorities, is to be part of an exchange of prisoners between the U.S. and Russia involving civil rights advocates on the side of the Americans and unknown agents on the side of the Russians. However, the conversation is positive, and we learn in the course of this reporting that the conversation has been underway for some time, and that Mr. Navalny was part of this conversation at one point, but his mysterious and sudden death in the wintertime took him out of the formula. Still, Gershkovich is coming home, and I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft to help me understand, is this a positive in the Cold War fashion? Now and again, we exchange spies at the bridge in Berlin, at the edge of Berlin. Or does this mean there are other conversations going on about settling the disputes, chiefly to do with Ukraine? Well, there are plenty of prisoners to settle there. A very good evening to you, Anatole. How to read the Gershkovich story? Is this a predicate for deeper conversation between Moscow and Washington on the eve of a presidential election? Good evening to you.
Hello, John. I mean, it could be. It certainly indicates, of course, that channels of communication are still there, which is positive. But as you said, I mean, this is very much the old Cold War playbook. You know, such exchanges happened, many times during the Cold War, and very often involved either an exchange of real spies, of suspected spies, and, of course, of Soviet dissidents, or today Russian oppositionists, for KGB agents, Russian agents now, arrested in the West. So this is in some ways a very traditional exchange. The Russians get their spies back. And that, by the way, is something that the KGB and its successor organizations have always made a point of honor to recover their people from Western captivity and have been willing, you know, to give up quite a lot in exchange. The biggest question which remains open, so far we know that the Americans detained are going to be exchanged, Gershkovitz, Whelan, Kumasheva. It's not yet clear, though it seems likely, that the Russians are also going to exchange leading opposition figures, notably Vladimir Kara-Murza. There's speculation to that effect, but it's not confirmed yet. That, from the Russian point of view, would be a much bigger concession or package from their point of view, because Kara-Murza in particular is a pretty significant figure in the Russian opposition. It would also, by the way, be a sign, I think, of self-confidence, though, on the part of the Putin administration. I mean, a feeling that the Russian opposition in exile doesn't really matter very much anymore, and therefore, you know, doesn't matter if you add a few more people to it.
I add in two puzzles then in these last days. The Ukrainian foreign minister in Beijing, indicating to Wang Yi, the foreign minister of the Chinese Communist Party and the government, that Kiev is looking to talk or negotiate, or there are a lot of words here, have meetings or at least exchange thoughts with Moscow over a way to solve the crisis of Ukraine, which is right now looking like a bloody frozen battlefield, both sides exhausted and short on manpower. We have an update on that from Reuters in these last hours that President Zelensky has qualified what he's looking for. He doesn't want China as a mediator, but he does want Beijing to put pressure on Moscow. Fine, there are diplomatic words here. But the offset of this is those Russian and Chinese bombers flying off of Alaska, alerting NORAD, and the U.S. and Canada sending up high-performance aircraft to greet them. That's Cold War stuff. And it points to the contest with the U.S. beyond Ukraine. Again, this is all signaling, and it could mean anything. How do you interpret those two events? Zelensky indicating he wants China to put pressure, and they're looking for conversation in some fashion, and bombers off Alaska.
Well, I mean, there undoubtedly is a shift now in Ukrainian attitudes. I mean, that was sent also signaled by the visit of the Ukrainian foreign minister Kuleba to Beijing, and statements from the Ukrainian government that they are now prepared to negotiate directly with Russia, something that they previously refused to do, and that they would invite Russia to the next meeting of this peace conference in Switzerland. So all of this, I think, indicates a growing recognition in Kiev that they cannot, in fact, win the kind of complete victory which they were previously talking about, and the recovery of all their lost territory. But the Russians are not willing to. I mean, the Russians are willing, to judge by my visit to Moscow, to give up deeper ambitions in Ukraine, much more territory, and creating a client regime in Kiev. But there is a very strong consensus in Moscow against returning any territory to Ukraine from the four provinces that Russia claims to have annexed. And this being so, it seems to me extremely unlikely that the Chinese would put pressure on Russia to do so. The Chinese might work for a compromise, but it would be a compromise, obviously, that they thought Russia was prepared to accept. And as you said, the growing Chinese-Russian military cooperation shows that this is a deepening relationship between Moscow and Beijing, which I don't think the Chinese would be prepared to spoil, with a peace initiative that they were sure the Russians would reject. So, all of this has probably a long way still to run. Also, of course, everybody is waiting for the results of the U.S. presidential election.
Let's underline what that means. Mr. Trump has been candid in how he would conduct himself as president, even before he was inaugurated, if he's successful on November 5th, which is to open negotiations and settle in some fashion, satisfy Ukraine. Not many details, but the intention is no more war. I'm unfamiliar with the vice president's position other than to support the President Biden's position, which is as long as it takes. Theoretically, you could argue that Moscow favors this or that, but Moscow's looking for what? Are we looking for territorial concessions? Are we looking for the promise no NATO or ever in Ukraine? Are we looking for disarming Ukraine? Can you tell? Because there have been a variety of remarks over the 29 months of the war.
Well, I mean, Putin's latest statement set out Russian demands very clearly. Neutrality as an absolute condition. And he called on the Ukrainians to withdraw from the remaining parts of the four provinces that Russia has claims to have annexed, that they hold. Now, that seems to be a complete non-starter. The Ukrainians will not do that. Unless, of course, Russia can capture them, which also looks unlikely, though not impossible. There is conceivably, though I wouldn't like, certainly wouldn't like, you know, to be naively optimistic about this, there is a possibility that Ukraine could withdraw, but Russia would not occupy, and these remaining areas would be turned into a demilitarized zone, something that there is a lot of talk about in Russia, the need for, you know, extensive buffer zones between Ukrainian and Russian forces patrolled by the United Nations. So while and on demilitarization and denazification, however, the Russian position still remains very vague. I was told in Moscow that, you know, basically, if Russia could get a treaty of neutrality and a ceasefire, leaving existing Russian territorial gains in place, Russia would be willing to negotiate those points down to something not quite symbolic, but not, you know, not very strong. But no Russian withdrawal from the territory that they now hold. I think that is absolutely clear. However, there is one important point which I think has not been brought out sufficiently in the West, which is that everybody I talked to in Moscow, including the real hardliners, said that they do not actually expect Ukraine or the West or anyone else legally to recognize Russia's annexations. And that's, they know that the Ukrainians will never do that, the West will never do that, but importantly, they also know that the Russians, the Chinese, the South Africans will not formally recognize annexations. This is completely against their basic principles. And so, you see, in a way, Ukraine doesn't actually have to concede these territories to Russia. It just has to accept a ceasefire, leaving these territories in Russian hands. And then their legal status, you know, as in the case of Cyprus, the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus, is endlessly deferred for future negotiation. That, I think, is in the end what is going to happen in an eventual peace settlement. That, and by the way, Zelensky also himself proposed this for Crimea at the very start of the war. No legal concession, but future negotiations. That, I think, is probably what will eventually happen.
I'm speaking to Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. Before there was a Ukraine crisis, there was a Georgian crisis, and when we come back, there might be on another one coming in October after the vote. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Hey, everybody. It's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Goodbye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.